It's showtime, folks. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game on this Wednesday. Hope you're having a great start to your day. Draft day is almost here. Predators even up the series. 4-1 win last night in Vancouver. And, you know, I felt the later in the day it got, and even before the Thatcher Demko news, I felt pretty good about it. And they did not disappoint last night.
Fantastic. You know, it's funny. Monday we're getting here. We're all like, you know, because we're up late and you lose. It's crazy the attitude, the 180 swap when the team wins. Nobody's tired. Yeah. Nobody's tired. Monday we're like yelping. We're all tired. We're good.
Yeah.
Because the Preds won last night.
Fantastic. So I am I'm a man of integrity, and I feel like that when something happens that I think transparency and being honest is important. That's just something I've always felt. So I am going to admit something.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to say it was the late third period. I might have fallen asleep. It might have happened.
I'll admit it.
It's all right.
Yeah, I might have fallen asleep.
I woke up around like 2 minutes left and I saw the scoreline. I was like, okay, it's a sweep.
Yeah, I woke up in post game and saw Willie's beautiful face and I was like, okay, good. Turned over.
My thing was, I was. What was it going? 3-1 going into the third.
Yeah,
and I was like, "All right, man, do you? I don't want to wake up in the morning."
No, like that. That was I was trying to avoid that, and like I had. It was a great night for sports, but great night for hockey too. And so I had Colorado Winnipeg on my iPad, and then I had the Preds on the TV, and I was just like, and it worked out perfect because the Preds would be in intermission and they'd be playing on the other game. But I was fighting it. Like, I started fighting it hard in the second period. Not that the game wasn't entertaining. It was just I was tired.
Right,
and
yeah.
So I fought it as hard as I could. And
yeah. Well, that's the thing. I didn't want to fall asleep and then wake up this morning like, oh, this amazing 5-4 overtime game. Blah. I was like, I want to see what happens. And then so they did it, man. They got it. And now it's a best of five, and they're back here. And so the charge is for Friday night for Preds fans, just lose your mind. I mean, that Vancouver, they're talking about how loud that Vancouver building was.
Yeah.
Let's equal and or triple that, double, whatever.
Double, triple.
Yeah. Friday night and
single,
do that.
Double, triple.
Yeah, now you get me hungry. Thanks. So just get it done. Friday is going to be amazing downtown.
Yeah, Forsberg finally scores last night. What was interesting is, and I agreed with Twitter, you know, Forsberg was not playing well in the first half of the game, just like kind of we saw in game number one. And then he got a shot off that was almost a goal, and it's like, ah, there he is. Okay, that's the Philip Forsberg we know. And then a few minutes later, he scores. So yeah. Did that unlock Philip Forsberg, playoff Philip Forsberg?
I hope.
I mean, he's got. If you look at his points, you know, you just look at the stats, and people might go, oh, hey, no, he's having a good playoff. He's got like 3 points. He's fine. So but, you know, it's you need more than that. Need him to score. He does that last night. Bevilier, Forsberg, Sissons, and Sherwood scoring for the Predators. Zadorov, the lone goal scorer for Vancouver. And they solve Casey DeSmith and get the win, tie it up at one apiece. But, I mean, there were still parts of the game that I know Andrew Brunette is going to focus on and want to work on. I credit Vancouver for playing the matchups like they did. And now Andrew Brunette has that capability in his back pocket coming back to Nashville and getting last change.
I'm reading ESPN.com on the NHL page, and – there is nothing about the Nashville Predators winning the game. All they say is Canucks lose goalie for at least game two. Nothing. So yeah. It's fun. The respect, no, it's respect fine. Continues. I would keep using that and using that and say, all right, we're going to get our respect. And yep. Then I would put that out there. And so no love there. But now, you know, you're back here 1-1. We talked about it yesterday. Get mad, get angry, and get steal that win. But they didn't steal a win last
night. No, they won last night. Because,
yeah.
And part of the reason was, you know, we got to give flowers to somebody else. UC Saros was fantastic.
He was.
UC Saros definitely rebounded from game number one. And I thought it was fantastic last night.
And then his soundbite afterwards about how he got hit in the net, and he was thankful he's wearing a double cup. Did you hear this?
No, I did not hear that.
Yeah, he was right. Dr. Crane, the talk this morning on the double cup, he wears a double cup.
Apparently Joe Rexroad's going to do a test about that later. That's right.
Can we participate in that?
Sure.
Can we?
I got a baseball bat in my car. Rex Rhodes, stay around.
Wait. Can we do that? We can like give listeners a chance.
Oh, you got the smash car.
Can we do that?
And you got hit Rex Road below the groin. I mean, what are we going
to
do here?
I think we're just one phone call from Sean Henry away of getting this to happen.
Oh,
this
kick is Rex Road at the family.
Yeah, with this double cut. I've got a really – well, Chase, you got a nice bat in your – I got a nice bat in my office. We could.
Well, the bat's a little excessive. No, man.
Double cut. What are you going to use then? Your
just
knee?
Just kick him.
Okay. All right.
But the question is, like, do we allow the cup over the clothes or under the clothes? Do we want him to just be
under.
Degrading? Yeah. Do we have it over the clothes?
No, it'd be under. Like, oh, okay. Saros has it. I mean, a double cup. I'm like, we all wore one playing sports. I mean, I wore one. I mean,
I'm not sure if it was a double cup.
No, not a double cup.
I mean, I don't understand. What is a double cup? I don't understand.
I don't know. I know there was one, and this we all guys know this talk. I mean, there's one you wear. You know, catcher wears one. I ended up wearing one in football because a friend of mine suffered a really bad testicular injury. I know I said that wrong, but so we're all like, oh, I'm wearing one from now on. But I don't know what is it one that's
I'm
larger?
Scared to I'm honestly scared to Google this.
Chase will suspend himself for a week.
Our text line, 615-737-1025 and phone line driven by WilsonCountyHunted.com, talking about, Rex Road and testing the double cup. 4415 says, Jackass has done that, been there. I didn't know Stillman did that.
But did they just do kidding. A double cup?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
Like, do you stack them on, like, does that really help?
Honestly, I feel like it just has more pain if you just double cup.
Because, like, let's be honest, even, because we've all been there, yep. Even if you're wearing a cup, it still doesn't feel good.
No, it's very restricting.
Yes.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, even if you take a direct hit, like, it still doesn't feel good.
No, not at all. So, I guess cup two is going to be larger than cup one. I mean, it would make sense for that to be.
I'm not going to lie to you. I did not expect to be talking about cups today.
Well, I mean, it was – I get this morning and I was reading that.
Can we get the Marge Simpson clip on she needs a – can you spell that?
All right. So that's
just pulled up a picture. Yeah, yep. This thing is it's like the, I guess you call it a Maserati of cups.
So okay.
It's top notch stuff.
I need to look.
But is it a double cup?
It has a lot of protection. So you could call it a double cup. It just looks like one massive like
cup. Okay.
I don't know how else to describe it. I mean,
double cup, God, man.
You're gonna lose me in a second.
These are great things you talk about when you win. All right, double. Now, okay.
Yeah, we go from Predators win 4-1 to double cup. So wait, Sorrow again, I admit it, I fell asleep at the very end. So that was a thing? He said that?
Someone asked him that.
He got hit pretty hard by the net late in the game, and they said, are you okay? Any problems? He's like, no, I'm glad I wore or I have my double cup on. And it just I know there's it's the soundbite's out there, not to put you on the spot, Dr. Crane, but I know it's out there, and that was what they were talking about, a lot of people this morning.
Okay, Willie's going to join us at 10. I'm asking him about this.
About a double cup?
Yes. Double cup.
The only thing I know about double cups, I've told Joe about this, if you double cup a coffee in the coffee room, that is the best way to drink coffee in this place.
Well, I'm glad that's where you went with this because I was about to be like, you're a little too much of an expert on this, and it concerns me a little.
We double cup coffee all the time. Dr. Crane and I have a bond. Yeah. We double cup coffee all the time.
I was trying to make a double dip the chip reference, but
no. Just so you don't burn your hand. It's so hot.
No, yeah.
Yeah, so, but these are good things. When you win, you talk about fun things. Instead of like, oh, God, they're back here, it's 0-2, and they lose, it's 0-3. Now it's a whole new world, and we can explore the world of double cups, which is fantastic, as we look and see where it is.
This is not how I expected us to start the show, but you know what? I'm glad we did.
Yeah.
I was going to go on a rant for a second, but now I don't need to.
I Googled double cup, and I got how to double your cup at a convenience store when you get coffee. So
you gotta
that's
put
not
sports at the end of your.
Oh,
your
okay,
search.
All right.
Do double cup and then put sports, and you'll get what you are looking for.
I get double cup strain. I don't need that. Okay, there we go. I guess it's a hockey goalies wear all double cups. Ring up Chris Mason, wake him up. Get him up.
Well, he's probably headed to the airport.
Get him out of bed. Let him figure this out.
Well, we'll ask Willie. Willie will join at 10 because my guess is he's going to be with Chris and Hal and all that. We might have to bring this up. I mean, we need to know how this all works because we are an informative show, and we're here to help you.
All right, I googled this one, like the Premier Double Cup, and I feel like I'm looking at a dominatrix page. I need to get off this page here and not do this. And we'll just talk to Willie later on. Okay, that's Mason. $140 for this? Are you kidding me?
The creme de la creme of cups?
Can you go to Play It Again Sports? I'd like the double cup, if you don't mind.
Can I get a used cup, please?
Make it a double. Oh, Lord. Shoot that thing.
I don't know anymore.
They offer that at Play It Again Sports. They have all the hockey gear.
I can see you walking in there and say, hey, can I get a double cup used? And like, sir, please leave our store. Don't come back.
No, but what would you do if they're like, yeah, we got a whole selection back here. They like got cracks in them and they're discolored.
No way in hell. Oh, man.
Well, we do have a great show for you. We are going to talk more about not as much about cups, but the Predators win 4-1. They've tied the series at 1, coming back to Smashville Friday night. Again, Tim McGraw at Bridgestone Arena tomorrow. And so that's why there's a couple days off in between. Plus, the draft, finally, tomorrow night, John McClain going to join us at 9:30. So we'll get his thoughts on that and probably ask him about Houston's new uniforms as well. But a lot of other things to get into. You can weigh in 615-737-1025. That's our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHonda.com. I just saw your tweet, double cup.
Yeah, bring it on, man.
So we will get into that and much, much more next on the Chase and Big Joe Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. We're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. You guys are hilarious today on the text line. I mean, if we're talking about double cups, I can only expect so much. But
yes.
All right, so we need to find this clip. I need to hear this from UC Soros. Do we have it? Okay, you're looking for it. Because Willie's not even sure what we're talking about either. So,
okay, I saw it this morning. Let me go back and find it here.
Yeah,
real quick.
I need to see this and make sure we just haven't made something up.
No, it's I'm here. Yeah, okay. Read and I'll find.
Okay, our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I'm just gonna read these because they're funny. Andy says, "My wife is a 36 and wears a double cup." Hiyo. Bradford says, "Double cups have built-in springs." Is that true? Is that true?
I don't know. I don't know. And I thought I knew everything about athletic attire.
I have no idea. Matt says, as the father of a young travel hockey goalie, I'm very happy to hear there is such a thing as a double cup. I mean, I feel like this technology is probably a very good thing.
Yeah.
B-Man says, Rexroad will be fine to take a shot to the Jewels. He is high on gummies anyway.
Is he?
No.
All right, so I found the clip. It's Alex Doherty on Twitter.
Okay, there you go.
And it says, the caption says, UC Soros says he feels okay after Dakota Joshua crashed into the net in the third. And then Soros has the quote after that.
Robbie just texted me. He doesn't think there's a clip. It's just the tweet.
Oh, dang. Okay.
I want to hear this.
Well, the thing is if you look at Doherty's Twitter, the picture shows people recording audio, so somebody has it.
Oh, yeah.
He's got to be somewhere.
He's surrounded by guys. Yeah.
Got to be somewhere. 1978, I double fist beers all the time. Is that close to a double cup?
I knew that was going to come down. I know it's not, but.
Yeah, these are good. Byron says, big win for the fans, and y'all are talking about a completely different type of athletic supporter.
Well, that's good. That's something we could bounce off that then. Instead of talking about them losing, that's 1-1, and now we'll come back, and now Soros is becoming an urban legend.
Some may say the Preds are up 2-1.
Oh.
I see what you did there. That was good. That was good.
You and that
Dr. Crane.
Father Ryan education over my head.
Brian says, gents, most pro-level goalie cups are doubles. They're made that way. There's no additional modifications made, I assure you. We all need the protection we can get for our beanbags down there.
But why a double cup? Just say it's a larger cup.
Well, somebody on here said that might be the brand.
Oh.
Too. So I don't know.
See, this is how our show is a learning experience. If you're just now turning in, to learn that we learn together, and that's how we're learning.
1243, a double cup protects the impact and prevents recoil. Cause see, that's the thing. Like I remember I didn't play sports very long, but you know, when I did, had that, and you know, took a soccer ball there one time and it still didn't feel good.
Drop you to, you know, and I told my daughter growing up, if you get in trouble, scream, claw, and kick the guy in the groin and run, because everybody will fall. And if you don't fall, I'm like, all right, you're not human.
Yeah. Hair Metal Henry says, double cups is usually how I watch a Preds game at Bridgestone. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Hair Metal Henry.
Is he still blocked by the Preds, by the way?
I don't know.
I think he is.
Is he even on Twitter anymore?
No, yeah, he's right. He's not. So, yeah.
0474. Can you imagine if they win the Stanley Double Cup? Well done.
Yeah.
But I like their resolve, and I talked about this last night on Predators Playoffs Tonight. And earlier this year, I went and covered a football game for Fox 17 and a high school football game, and I was talking to FRA head coach Justin Geisinger after the game. And they had just lost to CPA the week before. It was their only loss of the season. And they won the big, you know, won the game and everything. And I asked him, I said, you know, what did it mean to have this bounce back and all that stuff? And he said, I told the guys earlier in the week that they had an opportunity they haven't had all year. And that was the opportunity to respond. And the show me how you're going to respond to adversity. And I thought that was a really good way to put it, that you have that opportunity now to show what happens when you lose. You know, what is your response to that loss? The Predators had that last night, and they did. They responded well. Now, you know, they had some down parts. I didn't think the first period was all that great. I thought they were, even though they were up 1-0, it felt like game one that they were on their heels. But then they came out as almost a different team in the second period and really put a stranglehold on the game and took it. And kept it.
They never stopped attacking. And that's the thing. People ask, well, why can't a hockey team go 82-0? All right, I know it's impossible. Or a football team going 17-0. At some point, you know, the motivation's not there, right? Yeah. Sometimes. But when you're motivated, and the Preds last night had all the motivation in the world, like, all right, we don't want to be down 0-2. Canucks, like, all right, we're up 1-0, we'll rally back like we did in game one, take this, we'll go 2-0. So the momentum and determination wasn't there, I don't think, for Vancouver. I think it was there for the Nashville Predators all night long. What's this crazy stat about blocked shots last night that they had? The Predators had like 1,000 blocked shots last night, something crazy. I mean, it's just unbelievable. That's sacrificing yourself for the better of the team. And the Preds did that last night. Look, I watch as a fan. I'm not breaking down line changes. You got guys here who do that much better than I can. I'm just a fan, and I love it, man. I love watching this. I love watching them fight. I love, you know, rallying back. I love the fact that they're coming back here 1-1, and it's Friday and Sunday are going to be amazing. They win Friday night, man. Sunday will be crazy. It'll be crazy anyway, but we'll worry about Friday night and get that victory there and go. But as a fan of watching this team, I thought it was great last night.
It was. And now, like you said, having a 1-1, the series tied at 1, as opposed to being down 0-2, is a completely different mindset.
Yeah.
And because now it's your barn. Now you can control the series. You can make it where you do have home ice advantage. And so you take – because now all you got to do is win your 3 at home and you're good.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, now it's best of 5.
Right.
You just keep knocking it down. And and now what becomes – the most important game in the history of the Nashville Predators is Friday night.
One. Yep.
Yeah, the next one.
The next one, for sure.
For sure.
Yeah, so here is, I just saw it. Alex Doherty, UC Saros says he feels okay after Dakota Joshua crashed into the net. It was a good thing I was wearing a double cup. We got to get the audio of this. I need to hear that for sure. But they do get the win, 4-1. Saros looked good, too. Larry looked great. I mean, I thought he had a bounce back. And, you know, I think a lot was made, and you know how this goes, Joe, that whenever there's a loss and there's something bad and all that, we dwell on it for 2 days and overthink it, and, you know, all it's like, oh, this Saros, he just his record in the playoffs is just terrible. He can't do well. I mean, does this mean Barry Trotz is going to decide to get rid of him and all this, like, that whole narrative started? Well, he shut it up last night, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because right now, Barry Trotz is not – I mean, I know he's always evaluating, but he's not going to let this, you know, each and every game go, well, Saros is in. Nope, Saros is out. Nope, Saros is in. Nope, Saros is out.
Yeah.
He's not doing that.
Donovan makes a good point, which is very simple. I mean, but the Predators had to win one game on the road if they want to move to the next round of the playoffs. They had to win one game on the road, and they did that. And that's so now it's even up, best of five, and they accomplished what they needed to do. I think everybody said, can you split in Vancouver, Quebec, or 1-1? 99.8% of Preds fans would have said, absolutely, yes, we'll take that. Including Chase McCabe.
30 blocked shots to Vancouver's 8, according to Lance on our text line.
30 blocks.
That's amazing. Yes. 33. Total shots were in the 80s, but 33 blocked shots, according to Dustin in Hopkinsville.
Our man SL in Knoxville sent us a thank you for listening over in Knoxville. We are the choice of Knox County Radio. Sent us a NHL story from 2017. When it comes to cups, one isn't just enough. Some goalies wear two. A few wear three. How do you move with three? What are you doing off the ice?
You look like the Michelin man if you walk with three. I'm going to be honest with you. You'll be waddling around like a duck.
I mean, two I get, you know, but three, that's a little excessive.
It sounds like the mom that would wrap their kid with bubble wrap, make sure they don't get hurt. That's what three cups, that's what
so
that signifies
this
for me.
Goalie, Brian Elliott, I guess he played for the St. Louis Blues, posted a picture
time.
Of his cup that was cracked by a shot.
Ooh.
Ouch. No, man. He goes, I was wearing one piece, and then that broke, and now most goalies refer to a double cup. One inside the other. I like a tight fit that's really personal, but sometimes it's hard to find a tight fit with a two cup, and I found one. And the double cup reference, Elliott says, become a minimum standard for most NHL goalies. I cannot believe I'm just now hearing about this. It's not like I go around asking people, are you wearing a cup? But now you're finding out. Oh,
but now,
man.
See, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to get a call from the Predators going, hey, can you tell Joe to quit asking, come into the locker room and asking everybody to see their cup?
Say, you got a double cup. I got to see it. Do you mind? Oh, man, this is fantastic. Good for Saros. You know, guy played his butt off last night. Now he's going to be the talk of the town for the double cup that's going on, which obviously they've done for years, and we're just now finding about here, which is fine.
Oh, yes, we are. Coming up next, we're not going to ask John McClain about double cups. I don't know. Maybe we will.
Well,
but
I'm going to hang up now.
He will join us next. We'll talk about the draft tomorrow night and what that means here next on the Chase and Big Joe Show, presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel, where we will be tomorrow, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game here on this Wednesday. The draft tomorrow night. Finally, thank the good Lord, it's here. We say hello now to John McClain from Houston. You can find his work, HoustonTexans.com. And John, I know you have to feel like we do, that finally the draft is here and we can quit talking about what ifs and actually talk about what has happened with the draft. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thank you. I go way back when it comes to the draft, way before ESPN, when we sat around a hotel ballroom in close to the Oilers facility, and all the teams were listed on top of a big board. The NFL would call. They would make an announcement, go up there and write the name on the board. Draft at one point was 24 rounds, then 18, then 16. At one point, they did 12 rounds in one day. And then finally, when ESPN started televising it, I think in 1980, that took it to a new level. And of course, it's just grown and grown. And now it's paralysis by overanalysis, as everybody likes to say. And I feel bad for the people that have to talk about it every single day. How much more can you say? Everybody's talking about trading up. Everybody's talking about trading down. And where the Titans are picking number 7 reminds me of a streak the Oilers went through in 81 through 87, in which they had a high draft choice every year because they were terrible. In 1982, they used their first-round pick on Mike Munchak, 1983 on Bruce Matthews, and 1984, they signed Warren Moon and drafted Nebraska guard Dean Steinkuhler. That was 3 first-round picks on offensive linemen, and the idea was they wanted to stockpile the top linemen and run the ball with Earl Campbell, who was a Hall of Fame running back, and the idea was run Earl right, Earl left, Earl up the middle. And then in 84, they signed Warren Moon, who was an unrestricted free agent, really the first in NFL history coming from Canada. So in 85, they took, it was an interesting story, in the 1985 draft because they got Ray Childers, defensive end from Texas A&M, and Ray was a great player. So they went through a string of high picks that helped them go to the playoffs 7 years in a row. No other team was able to do that. And when I look at the Titans in the 7th pick, the key to me for them to get Joe Alt is the Chargers at 5. The Chargers need offensive tackle, and they need wide receiver. And if they were to make that trade with Minnesota and get 11 and 23, it's a deep draft for wide receivers and offensive tackles, so they could fill both needs if they trade out. But if they stay at 5, and I don't believe anything Jim Harbaugh says, especially at this time of year, but he kept talking over and over about the offensive line and how important it was. So if indeed the Chargers were to take, say, Joe Alt, by far the best line prospect in this draft, then when Rand Carthon comes up at number 7, what does he do? That would probably mean one of the top 3 receivers would be available. And even though it's not a desperate need, adding another playmaker for Will Levis would be very enticing. So if that were the case, if all were gone, what do you guys think the Titans would do?
I'm kind of with you. I think if Neighbors is there, I think Malik Neighbors is a Tennessee Titan. That's what I think.
Okay, what if he's not? What if the Giants have taken him and Arizona takes Marvin Harrison Jr.? Some people still have Roma Dunze as a top prospect. Would you guys take a Dunze there, take another tackle, or trade down?
I'd consider a Dunze, but I'd also consider if there's a team behind me that loves one of these quarterbacks and I feel like I could add more draft picks, then I'd probably trade back.
I think that would be a very likely scenario. Rand Carthon, obviously, in total control of everything. And you want to put as many weapons around your quarterback and protect him as best you can when you're trying to find out if Will Levis can be the franchise quarterback. So I would expect him to take an offensive player. Good thing, when you have a need, and the need is 2 of the deepest and most talented positions, it's almost like you can't go wrong.
Yeah, exactly right. Talking to John McClain as the NFL draft is tomorrow and Friday and Saturday. John, take me back. We've broken down this draft so many ways, but I want to go back to a time when 1995, when the Oilers took Steve McNair 3rd, a guy of Alcorn State. You know, we saw how great Steve was when he came here and everything, but at that moment, what was the speculation like before? Because they needed a quarterback. He had Chris Chandler. What was it like taking Steve McNair, a guy out of Alcorn State who, you know, was not playing for a Power 5 school at the time?
Everybody loved McNair. Everybody had scouted him thoroughly. The Oilers had the 3rd overall pick. Jeff Fisher and Floyd Reese, he was the guy. McNair was in New York. Bud Adams sent his plane up there to get him. Some media people were on the plane. They flew back with Steve and his agent, Buzz Cook. And, of course, when he landed at a private airport, it was such a big deal because the team had been struggling. They were all they had gone from 12-4 in 1993, winning the AFC South and then Central, and then moving up. They won a playoff game, got beat here. Joe Montana's last miracle. The next season, when they're trying to get a new stadium, they go from 12-4 to to 2-14, the biggest plunge, one season plunge in NFL history, but that entitled him to draft McNair. Everybody was on board, as opposed to the next year when they took Eddie George and Floyd reasoned. I had Eddie George going to them in my mock draft because they told me how much they liked him and how they wanted him. Then Floyd trades down in the first round, and I'll never forget. PR guy Dave Pearson still gives me grief about this. I jumped up and started cussing. I should have been a little more professional, but I told everybody on my radio shows they're going to draft Heisman Trophy winner Eddie George. So Floyd trades down. I'm like, what in the hell? Then he got him anyway. Jim Moore, the Saints coach, taking a corner, said the biggest mistake he ever made was when he passed up Eddie George for, I think his name was Molden. And, of course, Eddie was one of the greatest running backs in history.
Yeah, and that, you know, and the rest is said for itself. We talked yesterday, John, about the most impactful draft choice, you know, since the Titans moved here in 1997, since it became the Titans in 99. And we all kept coming back to Javon Kurz, and we had a soundbite.
Well, we actually had the soundbite, and I wanted to play it for John.
Yeah, so, okay.
John, you'll appreciate this. So Floyd told the story a few years ago when he was still on our afternoon show of how he got Javon Kurz. And you probably remember this, but this was Floyd Reese telling the story of Javon Kurz.
The Javon Kurz draft. We loved Javon. I mean, we loved him. And I really thought Javon would go in the first, you know, 5, 6, 7 picks. And so, you know, I watched him, and he got past 7. And you're thinking, wow, you know, is there a chance? So we started calling these other teams. You know, would you be interested in a trade? Would you be interested in a trade? And we just couldn't find anybody that we could sell on a trade. So he keeps moving down and he keeps moving down. And now he's at 15. And in my mind, this will make your draft. If you can get this guy, it will make the entire draft. And so I called Richie McKay, who was at Tampa Bay, who was a GM at Tampa at that time. And I said, Richie, I said, I want to move up to your spot. I said, I'll give you virtually whatever you want. I said, I got to get there. He said, no. He said, I think I'm going to make the pick. Well, then the obvious thing you say is, oh, geez. Well, okay, who are you going to take? He said, I'm going to take a defensive lineman. And I went, oh, no. I said, who are you going to take? He says, well, I'm going to take, I think it was Booger McFarland. I said, McFarland? He goes, yeah. I said, oh, okay, bye.
And the rest is history. That was Floyd Reese. What do you remember about that?
Well, first of all, when you're talking about the most impactful draft choice since they got to Nashville, you know, Chris Johnson made a pretty big impact, too, but for what Javon Kurz, the freak, did right away, how he helped transform the pass rush, and really the defense, and he helped do it with the team because, you know, they drafted some superstars at the end here and then up there. Jeff and Floyd, they were on a roll, and they had a good personnel department with them, led by Rich Snead, the late Rich Snead. And so I thought, that was a great story, and I did not know it. I didn't know that that's how it came about, but that is a very, very interesting. And I'll guarantee you, you know, Booger McFarland was okay. He's a better broadcaster, really, than he was as a defensive lineman. And Rich McKay probably, oh, my goodness, we passed up the freak.
No doubt. We'll have more with John McClain coming up next, the draft tomorrow night. Do that here on the other side. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game. He's just a common man. Working hard. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game. On this Wednesday, continuing our conversation with the great John McClain.
All right, John, we see it all the time in the draft.
Stop, Joe, I got stories. I'm sorry.
No,
I've been looking through the Oilers drafts, and I found some very interesting. This just blows me away. The Oilers drafted 4 players who are head coaches in the SWAC. Chris Dishman, the new head coach at Texas Southern, safety, he was a corner, but safety Bud McDowell, head coach at Prairie View, Eddie George, of course, and in 92, their first pick, second round, Eddie Robinson, the coach at Alabama State. I think that is pretty darn amazing. And I thought of a story here that, people ask me all the time about interesting draft stories. And back when the draft was still 12 rounds, that was in 92 was the last year, before they went to 8 rounds in 93. And their last 8th round pick was Blaine Bishop, a safety from Ball State. And but in the last pick, the Oilers needed a kicker. And then the draft in 92, in which Eddie Robinson was the first pick, the general manager, Mike Olivak, he took a kicker, Joe Wood, from Air Force. So we got Joe back then. We interviewed every player on a conference call. So they were so fired up to get their kicker. And Mike Olivak had talked about how excited he was. So we get Joe Wood. He talks about how happy he is to be drafted. Never thought he'd be drafted. And he couldn't wait to get to Houston in 4 years. And we're like, what do you mean 4 years? He said, well, I've got an Air Force commitment for the next 4 years. And when we interviewed Mike Olivak, we told him that. And he goes, oh. So they had to get another kicker.
Oh, my goodness. By the way, I'm looking at the 1992 draft. Not a single player in that draft, John, made the Hall of Fame. So it just shows you that you never know. You could evaluate a guy all day long. You never know what you're going to get. And with that being said, this talk about Drake May, about falling down, we had a discussion the other day, you know, John, if Drake May is there at 7, should the Titans take Drake May? I say absolutely not. But a lot of people say, look, if he's the best player on the board, take him. Your thoughts?
That's a waste of time. There's no way Drake May is going to be available with the 7th pick. It's preposterous.
Look
at what he did this year and this past season, when he didn't have all the people around him that he had the previous year when he was outstanding. So Drake May is coveted by a lot of teams up at the top. Now, maybe Minnesota trades up to get him or J.J. McCarthy, but I don't see any way May is available, because somebody would have traded up to get him before that, if indeed he started to fall out of the top three.
Another thing is, I think Brock Bowers will be a fine NFL player. But, John, if he's there at 7, the Titans should not take him, because we've talked about it. They need a left tackle. Unless they're going to move Brock Bowers to a left tackle, they shouldn't take him if Joe Walt's still sitting there.
I'll tell you something Al Davis told me one time, Joe. I was talking to him at a league meeting, and he said he always, always drafted for people who could score touchdowns, people who could put points on the board. Now, the game has changed since then, with so much of an emphasis on defense. You know, everything's about the quarterback. You protect him and you get him with a pass rush. So the tackles and the ends. And now, of course, shortest path to the quarterback's up the middle, so there's more of an emphasis on defensive tackles. But with all due respect to Brock Bowers, who's like a big wide receiver, he weighs like 245. He can line up anywhere. I think he'll be a great receiver. But you can get tight ends. Where was Travis Kelce drafted? 3rd round. Where's George Kittle drafted? 5th round. You don't need to do that. But if you get a chance to get Joe Alt, who can anchor that left side for 10 years, maybe more if you pay him, who is one of the most well-schooled offensive tackles coming out of college in history, you've got to take Joe Alt, because you can get tight ends, you can get wide receivers, you can get running backs, you can get interior offensive linemen, you can get them in the other rounds.
We're talking to John McClain from Houston. John, you've covered a lot of these drafts for a long time. So on the day before the draft, you're talking to people, how much is your BS meter up? Because this is lion season. I mean, this is, you know, smoke screens are everywhere. And, you know, Floyd used to tell us that, you know, he would tell one scout that he's going to take one player, and he'd take another scout, he's going to take another player, and then whoever the paper had, he knew where the leak was. So how much is your BS meter up right now?
During draft time, Floyd only lied when his lips moved. And we all knew that, and he was always very nice about it. But he did help me a few times, like on Eddie George. But it's amazing. I don't know how the teams differentiate. I guess you can talk to people you're close to and know they're going to tell you the truth. But I don't know many, unless they don't have a clue who's going to be available in the middle on down in the first round, really in the middle. You know, all we know right now is Caleb Williams is going first. Projections are that Daniels is going second, and Drake Mayer, J.J. McCarthy is going third. And there's so many teams that still need quarterbacks, but there's nothing to hype up a draft than one that's deep in quarterbacks like this one and so many teams needing him, because it's the sexy position, the toughest position to play in football. And when you think about the going rates, about $50 million a year. I remember when running backs were paid more than quarterbacks. Quarterbacks threw about as many interceptions as they did touchdown passes. And if you had 20-something touchdown passes, you were the ruler of the land. And so I like reading speculation and listening just like everybody does. But it's amazing. Of all the mock drafts I did for over 40 years, I only got double figures one time. And the most interesting story I've ever heard about the draft, Bill Belichick told his story at the eulogy for Joel Buschbaum, the late NFL editor for Pro Football Weekly, who was the best football guy I've ever seen who wasn't with a team. At the eulogy, Belichick was the first speaker. I was second because Joel did a show here on my station for like 20 years every week. So Bill got up and said the last thing he did the night before his draft was call Joel Buschbaum. And he would tell him, he trusted him so much, he would tell him his draft board. And he said if Joel told him, Bill, I don't think you should take this guy, he said, I wouldn't say we're not going to do it, but I would give serious thought. He tried to hire Joel when he was with the Browns and the Patriots, said, I will pay you more than any money you can ever imagine. And he said, Bill, thank you, but I feel like I work for every team in this job. I was the only reporter to go to Brooklyn where he lived and write about it. He wouldn't let anybody else do it. Anybody wants to read it, John McClain, Joel Buschbaum, B-U-S-C-H-B-A-U-M. It's on the internet. And so for Bill Belichick to have that much confidence and trust in a guy who wasn't even in the NFL, that has always blown me away.
John, great stuff. Always enjoy the stories. And I'm sure we'll have more to tell next week after the draft and sift through it all, but appreciate it.
I look forward to it, guys. Good luck to the Titans in the draft.
Thank you. John McClain joining us from Houston. You can get his work at HoustonTexans.com as well. I always love the stories with John. Ooh. Coming up next, we'll check in with Willie D. He'll join us from Vancouver. They're about to head back, but get his thoughts on the game last night and maybe double cups as well. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game.